Aloha and welcome back to another episode of the Ohana Packers Edition podcast, the podcast where two dudes from, well, this time not quite halfway around the world as I'm on Christmas vacation in California, so we're only a couple time zones apart, but I'm Mike and that's Iowa Joe. Joe, recapping finally another Packers win as Green Bay beats the lowly Carolina Panthers in the most apropos way for this team to do it as far as this roster staff is constructed, but it's good for the Packers to get a win. Joe, how's your Christmas Eve going so far?
Well, considering I'm still locked in my room with the COVID, it's all right, but it's been about a week. I'm feeling somewhat better. I got to go back to work tomorrow, but it's not a Christmas. I've never been a Christmas guy, but it's even worse now when you're an adult and you don't have the joys as you did when you were a kid. So I know you guys are probably prepping all kinds of things for the little ones and all that stuff. So, but it is what it is. The win was disgusting. This says it all. I was reading from one on Twitter where one of the guys that was on the sidelines tweeted out where some Packer fan threw a plate of nachos into Joe Barry's face as they were leaving the field. And this has been like the second time in 3 weeks that somebody's hit Joe Barry with something. And that just sets the mood as it is. You know, these guys were 2-12 going into today's game. And for obvious reasons, we didn't get to do our preview, so we got to kind of catch up a little bit here. But, Bryce Young hadn't thrown a touchdown pass in almost a month. And today he throws for, what was it, 2 touchdowns and probably almost 300 yards.
No, he was at 3. We'll get into it, but he had never thrown for 250 as an NFL quarterback, and he throws for 312 today. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But let's start with the good. Let's start with the good side, since it is the holiday season. And the good news for Packers fans is Jordan Love continues to look like the guy as the quarterback of this offense. And for the first time in a while, the Packers got a balanced attack on offense. 369 yards of offense today, but pretty decent balance, net yardage accounting for sacks, 207 in the air, 162 on the ground today. But overall, Jordan Love, I would say a good B plus game today. Saw the highlight throws. His 2 touchdown passes were really nice throws, especially the first one to Wicks where he, no one likes to, I know it's being a dead horse and all that kind of stuff, but it did look a lot like what Aaron would do in terms of maneuvering the pocket, finding a way up through the B gap, and then, kind of running parallel to the line of scrimmage to his right and finding Wicks in the front of the end zone. But,
that was a throw and the catch, both are reminiscent of the one in the Super Bowl against the Steelers where Rodgers hit Jennings in the end zone and, almost the same exact type of thing, where even down to the nitty gritty where Wicks takes a hit as soon as he catches it. So yeah, he had some pretty ones today.
Yeah. So wasn't his best percentage. I think there was a point where he was above 60%, with like 20 passes, but ends up 17 for 28, but still a healthy yards per attempt. Average was almost at 8 yards per attempt. So that's what you'd like to see. And clean game, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, no fumbles. Did take the 1 sack. I wasn't able to watch much of this game. And I haven't had a chance to get back to it yet, but the parts that I did see, it looked like, Love was his just his calm, collected self and was in control of the offense. But Joe, did anything stick out to you in particular for today's game from Jordan?
It seemed like he had some pretty clean pockets. I mean, they did get a little bit of pressure on him. There was one bad sack that he took that I don't know if it was his fault. I don't know if it was Myers' fault. I don't know if you know, what happened, but they had a free runner. The linebacker had a free run in to get the sack, and he took quite a hit on it. From my untrained eyes looking at it, it looked like Myers missed the block, but it also could have been Jordan missed the pre-snap call. I don't, to, you know, the adjustments, I don't know.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, there were some bad drops. Obviously, Jordan was playing without quite a contingent of receivers. Didn't have Jaden, didn't have Christian. Obviously, doesn't have Musgrave.
Wicks left the game at one point, yep. too. Yep.
And then it looks late at the game. It looked like even Kraft may have got some kind of ding. I don't know if he was holding his wrist or if he was holding his ribs, but after that last catch he had, he took quite a hit. And although I have to say this about Tucker, if you want to survive in the league and you want to have kids someday, I don't know if he has kids already, quit jumping up and taking shots. to the nuts. That's going to do you. I mean, it looks pretty on the field, but it definitely isn't going to feel good if you continue to do that. But he looked good today. Even Bo Melton kind of had a breakout game today and looked pretty good. Overall, the offense was decent. I loved seeing them continuously feed Aaron Jones. I wonder if they kind of backed off a little bit late after the hit he took from, I want to say it was the linebacker that got the sack on Jordan on that free run, because I was really surprised that didn't get called a penalty just because of the way the hit went. You know, Jones was breaking it off the end and wasn't really tucked, and the guy just threw his shoulder and that right into Jones's head. And, you know, we've seen that be called a penalty before. You know, in one way, I'm glad they didn't, but in the other way, it's like, well, you know, you've been calling that already. Why aren't you calling it now? Type of thing. But overall, you know, again, the offense as a whole just seemed to really click. I mean, there were times that you question play call, you question this, you question that. I really didn't pay much attention to the rotation, so I don't know if they – I did see Sean Ryan played a good chunk of – snap, so I don't know if they left him in or if they played a rotation still. So yeah, the offense definitely is not a spot that you can complain about today.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're putting up 30 plus, you know, and I know that the Panthers aren't a great team, but they have had a, you know, Evero has turned around their defense, and they've been a strong unit on that side of the ball, an ascending unit on defense the second half of the season. So it was good to see the Packers put together. You know, I think the broadcast kept, at least for the parts of the first half I could watch, the broadcast kept circling back to that whole point that the Panthers haven't allowed a 300-yard passer either all season or for a while this season and stuff. So, like I said, that was why it was even more important for this offense to be balanced today. And in like, kind of like you said, it was good to see them get to that point, because obviously you don't want Jordan taking too many of those kind of blow up hits like that. And those things are going to happen when you're a first time starter. We've heard all season that he's got a command of the offense and that he knows how to make the reads, how to make the line calls and stuff, but you're going to make mistakes. We see veteran quarterbacks make those kind of mistakes. So having him, having him go through that and be able to lean on a strong running day by this defense, by this offense, is, you know, just so important against a team like the Panthers, who can bring pressure. And you know, it's good to see that, Brian Burns didn't have too much of a, did he play today? Actually, oh yeah, no, he did play. So no quarterback hits for Brian Burns today. And actually just
very little production period.
Yeah. Just, two recorded quarterback hits for the Panthers as a whole. I know that one of them got taken away. Yetur Gross-Matos had a, roughing the passer penalty. It was one of those where it's kind of a bang bang play, but it kind of did look like he got Love up under the chin area and stuff. And you know that refs are going to just play it, err on the side of caution on those kind of calls.
It was another
and stuff.
Game today where it seemed like there were some questionable calls on both sides. Because even early on,
Lucas, I know we texted about,
you know, you would have thought he killed the punter, but you know, he barely got a hold of his ankle or his leg, his plant leg, and they called it roughing instead of, what are the two calls? It can either be roughing the kicker or
running into the kicker.
Running into the kicker. So instead of calling it running, they called it roughing. And so it was the major penalty on that. And it's like what I saw of it, and I'm kind of like Mike, I had a hard time with watching the game just because it wasn't on in my area. So I, like I told Mike, I had to do some voodoo type stuff just to be able to watch the game. And so I missed a lot of the first part, but what I, that moment that I did catch, it didn't look like he even hit him. It just looked like maybe, you know, he might've smacked the plant foot or something. And, but if somebody else watched it and can very, you know, say what, or Mike will go back later and watch the game or whatever, but it really didn't look like much. And then, what was the other one? There was a, I think there was a roughing against the Packers that may have been kind of a questionable one also, where he didn't really take a hit. He just got more shoved and they called it a roughing, which kind of helped them out a lot because they were driving and, it put them in better field position to go for the score. So again, it was one of those games that it went against both sides. So you can't complain about it too much because at least they were being fair on bad calls for both sides, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. And from what I'm getting, I from what I'm gathering on Twitter, the Packers didn't even have the worst of the referee roulette today. Anyone who watched parts of that Dallas Dolphins game saw what was, I think, on back-to-back drives, two of the worst roughing the passer penalty calls of the season. And I mean, that's saying a lot because it's been a weird season for personal foul penalties as a whole. But I mean, like, kind of like you said, Joe, that's part of the game at this point. So it was good to see the Packers overcome that. But we kind of alluded to it. Really nice game from Aaron Jones coming back. You know, people are going to always comment on, you know, his usage and how many carries he gets. Not so much how many carries he gets, but and I do agree with the idea that there shouldn't be a drive where he doesn't touch the ball and stuff. But yeah, the things that are working against Jones is he's always kind of been a smaller back. He's had some injury questions dating back to his days in college. And in the pros, you know, that hasn't turned out to be any different. So, and then especially when you consider this season, it's coming off a hamstring pull and MCL tear, and so you can only put so many carries on a guy like that, and he is getting older. So 21 carries, even if he had been fully healthy for the season, I honestly do think that's about as many rushing carries you want on Jones at any point, at any game, at any given time of a season. But it was really good to see him, you know, right off the jump. He had some explosive runs on the first Packers series, and it was good to see him carry it out through the rest of the game. And obviously that's, you know, it's not just him. The O-line blocked the Panthers front really well, but you know, this whole season, other than week one prior to the hamstring injury, Jones didn't look super explosive this season. You started to get that, you know, dark thoughts in the back of your head. It's like, okay, is it just the hamstring injury? Is it just the MCL?
I disagree with you with that one, Mike, because you said early in the season, well, the only game he played
the first
early
three quarter.
In the season was the, and I don't know how much more explosive you can get. I think that Bears game and this one has been his highest total yards in, I was trying to look it up here real quick.
And what I'm getting at is like, in between these two, you know, you didn't have this data point before today's game. So it does, you know, he's approaching 30, which is the age that most running backs, the wheels, you know, figuratively and literally do tend to fall off. But that's why I thought it was good to see Jones have this kind of a game again. And I know the Panthers aren't the best run defense, but any NFL defense that you can average 6 yards a pop on, I think it's just a good day. So it was.
But you know the I'm one sure thing Jones, that they did a, well,
yeah,
the one thing they adjust, they just didn't let it happen, you know, and say, oh well, we're gonna let them have this. They adjusted, and that's why it looked like Jones wasn't getting as free as he was earlier in the game. They adjusted to him, and they knew how banged up the Packers were in the receiving end, that they adjusted to him, and he averaged 6 yards a carry for 127 yards today. That's amazing. And even, I want to say it was Robert Smith, and I can't think of the other guy that was doing the commentating today, said that he's already at there's only three people in the league or in all of NFL history that have averaged like five yards a carry. Aaron Jones, Jim Brown, and I'm blanking on the
Peterson. It was Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson. And how much better? How much better company can you have? You know, one of the best running backs ever in Jim Brown, another top tier running back. I don't give him best because of the whole child abuse thing for him, but you know, still one of the top running backs. And then Aaron Jones. That just shows how good of a player he could be if he stayed healthy. You know, the sky's the limit for him, which is agreed. When he came out, when the Packers drafted him, I really likened him to a Darren Sproles, where they were going to be a playmaker, but they were going to have to be a gadget-type playmaker just to keep him healthy. And you could see that in both their games, where Sproles wasn't really the up-the-gut type runner. He was more the boundary-type guy or the gadget-type guy or the guy that you threw on special teams to make a play to have a good career. But I think he's still got, I mean, obviously we got to see what happens when the season ends, but I think he's still got a good couple years left in him.
Yeah, I do too. I think that one of the things that they've got to do this offseason is, and you know, Jones has made it so apparent that and clear that he wants to be in Green Bay, that he likes playing for the Packers, he loves being a Packer, and that there is some sort of, you know, coming together at the table that he and Goot are going to do this offseason to make sure that he's here, like you said, for at least 2 to 3 more seasons. I know he is technically under contract, but I get the feeling that they're going to do something kind of similar to what they did this offseason, where, you know, for all intents and purposes, Jones just gave back money to the team. There's no real way. There wasn't any sort of like the funny money business or anything like that. He just, I think the fine print mechanism of what he did was he basically gave up some bonus money or something like that. So I do think he deserves to get paid what he's worth, but that's where I think that, you know, they kind of do one of those sign him to a new extension kind of things and stuff. But I think that what they should be looking at doing for the running back room is, you know, making sure Jones is here for at least a couple more seasons. But then that's the whole thing is, like, you don't have to look for a Derrick Henry type or a this or that. Just find more Aaron Joneses. I think that's what has been the folly of the Packers.
You know what we need? A Jamal Williams type. Because that was the type of runner you need. You know, one that can do what you want A.J. Dillon to do, but also can do what an Aaron Jones can do. And, you know, that I understand, and this is ancient history, of course, but I understand not wanting to sign both Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams to, you know, major contracts. You hoped you could have, but you knew it wasn't going to happen. They weren't going to sign both of them. It was going to be one or the other. Now, hindsight's kind of 20/20 on that with the Aaron Jones injuries or whatever, but they did kind of make the better choice because Aaron Jones is more of the explosive playmaker. But you need that Jamal Williams type to go with an Aaron Jones. Yeah, Dillon has shown the last few weeks that he can do but it's still all potential with him. I still believe he's gone at the end of the year, and we definitely, please, for the love of Chuck, get rid of fucking Patrick Taylor. That guy is Jag. I can't, and I hate saying about that because I'm, you know, I'm a big Packer supporter. I believe we're all Packer family. That's why we named our friggin' podcast what it is. We're a family. Players, fans, coaches, staff, everything. It's a family. But for the love of everything, Patrick Taylor is not good. Now, granted, they shot themselves in the foot that they had to call up. What was it? It was Benny Sapp and
Bull Melton.
Yeah. So they and couldn't bring up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they couldn't bring up Kenyon Drake with him. But so cut Taylor and sign Drake. Works for me. Because he showed today, he just really isn't anything. When they needed him, he couldn't do anything. I think that's the one down spot of this game.
Yeah, and LaFleur's usage of Taylor was weird because I understand using Taylor as the 2-minute back. You know, the concept of it makes sense and all. But if you actually have Jones and he's healthy and he's not supposedly on a snap count, there is no point for Patrick Taylor to be getting 2 snaps at the end of the first half that matter, or running in a situation to make a field goal kick a worse kick or anything like that. Yeah, I, you know, every coach has had a binky player, and I, similar to the next guy we're going to talk about pretty soon, but I don't understand why LaFleur keeps trying to make Patrick Taylor a thing. Like I said, the former player in me can't stand the fact that he blew two weeks in a row, he blew get out of bounds in 2-minute drill situations.
And he wanted to run out of bounds today on one of the carries. You saw him. He could have went straight, and instead he kept cutting towards the sideline. It's like, what is going on in that head? And here's a stat line. 3 carries, 4 yards, 1.3 average. Then you come down here, 1 reception for -1 yard. I think my dog could have that much of a friggin' stat line.
Yep. So, the sooner they get, you know, we saw
Let me take a step back. I'm not calling Patrick Taylor a dog, and I'm not trying to disrespect Taylor in that way, and I'm not disrespecting dogs in any way. So before anybody comes at me on that, that's not what I'm saying. We're just saying,
calling it like we see it. Yeah.
Right. Like, and he's a Jag.
Yeah, there's, you know, we talk about it all the time where they churn the bottom of the roster and all that kind of stuff, but you got to just get someone better. And, you know, Emmanuel Wilson has been he's been designated to return. Maybe he's back, and, you know, I wouldn't be keeping Taylor over him at this point because the little bit we've seen of Wilson, just don't let him throw the ball, but the little bit we've seen of Wilson, I'll take what he offers over Taylor at this point. So
it can't be any worse. That's all I gotta say. He can't be any worse.
Yeah. But more good news on offense, like we kind of highlighted earlier, the O-line played well, and the receiving group played well. You know, it was another day where they spread the ball around. Not as evenly as they had in certain other weeks, but, you know, part of that is due to the fact that Wicks left early. You don't have Watson, you don't have Reed, but, you know, you had 3 guys with 4 catches between Dobbs, Kraft, and Melton. Wicks probably would have had more if he hadn't hurt his chest. Wicks
definitely would have had more.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, Mike froze. Technical difficulties, people. I'm going to get elevator music on here at some point and start playing that, because that way I don't have to sit here and try to make things up.
Forgets no receptions. But
all right, Mike, yep. you got to step back. You froze.
Fudge.
And I can't tell you where. I can't tell you where. Because I started humming elevator music until you came back.
All right. We're stepping back. So
something about O-line played well.
Okay. Yeah, so O-line, you know, like we said, the O-line had a solid day. You don't, I know that Dylan and Taylor didn't necessarily have good games running the ball, but when one, you know, your most important running back goes for over 120 and goes at 6 yards a pop, that's a good day in the office for the O-line. And you only give up 2 quarterback hits and 1 sack. That's another good productive day for that group of five. I know that Runyon and Ryan did rotate. Because I didn't watch yet, I can't tell you if it was a every other series kind of thing, but Wes Hodd was on top of it and was on top of the rotation. And I believe I saw a tweet from Wes later on that it was a what's it called, Rashid Walker only or predominantly mostly game. So I thought he, from what I saw of the game, I thought he played pretty well today. I do think that he is an ascending player. I'm not sure if he's set to be the left tackle next year or if they're going to, you know, play some musical chairs or whatnot. But he does look like he is a starter. And, you know, it's just a matter of how much or do they try to look for a better player in the draft. But Walker is at least a good contingency plan for the team moving forward there. So you've kind of, you know, you've shuffled that out of the deck this season. And then the receiving core, you had a balanced day from the receivers. No one ran away with receptions, but no one ran away with targets that were like unproductive. So yeah, Dobbs, Kraft, and Melton all go for 4 receptions. Melton was the lowest average at 11 yards per catch. Wicks definitely would have had a more productive day, but he was 2 for 2.
That's what we were talking about before you froze.
And, you know, it's just good to see these young guys continue to make plays. Funny note on Dobbs's day. I still don't really have a good opinion on the play. The reason I didn't get to watch much of this game is we had a shotgun baptism for my daughter, so I'll leave it at that. But I did see Adam Thielen's post-game comments about, you know, his sour grape comments about how, oh, well, they reviewed it and it went in the favor of Green Bay, and that's what happens when you play the Packers. And it's like, and on the other side, you have Dobbs saying, I took 3 steps and then the ball came out. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. So it's like, yeah.
I'm assuming that's the one where he lands on his ass and then rolls over.
Yeah.
Well, I know this is bias because of, you know, being a Packer fan and a Packer content creator and all that. But even the commentators were saying the same thing. He caught the ball. He secured the catch. He landed on his ass. Then he rolled out of bounds, and then the ball came out. That's a completion.
Yep.
Because as soon as his ass hits the ground and somebody touches him, he's down. Even if they didn't touch him, the next thing that happens is he hits out of bounds.
Yeah.
So that's a down.
And that's the problem that the NFL has created with the whole surviving the ground rule, is like, where does surviving the ground end? And they have in the past ruled like, oh no, that guy is clearly down. That ball was ripped out after he survived the ground and stuff like that. So and from what I've read and the few like clips that I've seen, I was like, that's a cat, you know, like it's one of those where, okay, as much as, you know, everyone's kind of beaten the Dez catch, no catch to death and stuff like that. What makes that play different than most of these is that play was fluid enough that if you watch it, you're like, oh, did he complete it or not kind of thing and stuff. And whereas this Dobbs one and a bunch of these other ones where it's like you let them Zapruder film it apart for like minutes on end and stuff. And it's like, okay, wait, he caught it, did something, fell over, scratched his ass, and then fumbled the ball. And it's like, oh, like, yeah, there's a difference between the two. So like you said, we're both biased in a sense, but
there's bias to it and it's hard not to be, but yeah,
it's one of those where it's like, yeah, it's a catch, get over it kind of thing and stuff. I just thought it's funny that it's hilarious that Thielen left the Vikings and still sounds like a sour grapes Viking. And he's like so far past his prime, and he's out there throwing out these stupid comments about, oh, that's what happens when you play the Packers. And I know everyone's like, we're the most penalized team. Like, just chill, bro. But
yeah, no kidding. Yeah. But I think we probably should move on to our least.
But it's the
I know we've been
avoiding, and I don't like talking about so negative. But no, we're gonna do it here. Almost ruining Christmas Eve for the Packers and their fans. Joe Barry, as yeah. we noted earlier, yeah. Bryce Young. This is not the Bryce Young winning the Heisman and potentially winning it back to back with Bama the last 2 years. No. This is Bryce Young in the NFL on one of the worst teams in the league with a bad offensive line, minimal proven weapons. like I said, dude hadn't thrown for he hadn't done it in a while. He hadn't thrown for 250 yards in his career. And all he does is have his best day as a pro by yeah. far.
Yeah.
Against the Packers.
Two touchdowns.
Yeah. And, you know,
well, and on top of that, look at what his receivers did. DJ Chark went for 98 yards and two touchdowns. Adam Thielen went for 94 yards. Tommy Tremble went for 59 yards. Even Amir Smith-Marset, which I'm not going to say horrible things about Hawkeye players, but he definitely is not a great receiver by no means, had one catch for 18 yards and went for two carries for 33 yards, including a touchdown on an end around. There's no excuse for this. And look for it sometime this week. I do have an article, and maybe Joey will throw in and we'll split an article about possible defensive coordinator replacements. But it's time. I'm really surprised that they just don't cut ties now. I know I've said forever that they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it, but it feels like it needs to be done.
And like, not even forget, like, we don't need to go into the on the field stuff. It's the same crap every week. Predictable zone coverages, offenses, just, you know, like, and that's the thing is like, whether it's Barry not even disguising his coverages or just calling the same thing in the same situation so that the opponent knows what's coming for him and how to exploit it. It's the same shit, different day. Barry is the walking embodiment of that phrase. But what my problem with this whole situation is now is LaFleur's post-game comments today, where he kind of alluded to, no, like, I'm not ready to go there. You know, he kind of, again, doubled down on the whole, not ready to have that discussion yet. Honestly, it was disappointing that the defense let up, you know, after we had gone up 30-16, it was disappointing to see the defense let up the scores and stuff. And it's like, okay, yes, guys need to play better, but how can you definitively say that it is purely on the players when your defensive coordinator is such an open book that, forget open book exams, the answers are just on the test next to the exam. Like, that's how bad Barry's been as a coordinator. And I tweeted after the game, I was like, the way he called the fourth quarter of this game, it honestly felt like one of those, yeah, fire me, let me see if you have the balls to do it kind of things, because I have no idea what to describe Barry's game planning and play calling at this point. Like, it just defies my logic at this point.
So I have 2 points. My first one I'm going to make is not necessarily just a Packer thing, but it's an overall. I think they just need to stop doing coach press conferences, because you never get anything worthwhile out of them. It's always coach cliche. It's always coach talk. Randomly you'll get a coach going in there all pissed off and will say some shit or whatever, but it don't happen very often. So let's just stop with the circus. Stop. I know the reporters want their sound bites and stuff like that, but I hate to say it like this, because I love writing and I was a journalism student, and you know, Wes Hodd is a really great writer, and we've got some really great beat writers on this team, or on the Packers team. But that's why journalism is going downhill. because all these fake press conferences where the coaches just give it up and give a bunch of coach speak and a bunch of generic terms and cliches and stuff like that, it just makes for the same content over and over and over again. Maybe they should start fining a coach for every cliche that he makes in a 20-minute press conference or something, but you're never going to get answers out of it, because in the way they do things, you're never going to have LaFleur go out there and say, yeah, he's shit canned, he's gone tomorrow. It never happens. And I completely forgot what point number two was off the top of my head. It's this whole COVID fog right now, but Joe Barry. Oh, I know what the other point was. You could even see on the field in certain areas where the players were could see what was going to happen, but they just went with the play call. There was one of the catches where it was either Thielen or it was Trimble got wide open over the middle. Jair followed him out, on his zone route and then passed off to the safety. Well, the safety's trying to cover over here in his zone. And you could see Jair just see the guy and he just stayed in his zone. I mean, I know he's a playmaker. I know he could make the play. But he's following the scheme. He's following his job. He's following where the coach tells him to go. And you saw that too often today where they were just, you could see that their eyes were following where the play was going to, but they weren't moving over to make the play because that's not
because part of it. Because they're getting called out for not following the call afterward. Like,
yeah.
And that's the part that I was kind of alluding to where I'm like, LaFleur is letting this become a problem that I don't know if he's going to be able to fix. Like, yeah, I tweeted after the game and it's gotten, you know, mostly gotten quote unquote praise and likes and stuff like that. But, you know, there's been some pushback. It's like, how can you say that that's what's definitely happening? I said, look at Jair's comments after the game. And I know some people are going to say like, oh, you can't take Jair's comments at face value because he's, you know, he's a disgruntled star and he's faking an injury and blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, Schneidman tweeted it. Schneidman's tweet is like, is it worrisome that you gave up 30 points to a 2-win team? Jair, yeah, it is, honestly. But we got to just play the call that's called, the play that's called. Kind of like you were alluding to. Everyone's like, oh, we've seen this formation on film. They probably know that the coverage they're in sucks against it. But, and I don't know who was on whose side in the whole Jerry Gray versus Joe Barry thing last year. I don't know if there's more of the same that's kind of, you know, if it's just on the players this season. And you remember there were some odd points in the season too where, like, I think it was after the London game where both Amos and Savage kind of bristled at the, because someone questioned them like, oh, it feels like the coverage from the safeties hasn't been that good this season so far and blah, blah. And I think it was actually Amos, which was even more surprising, but Amos kind of pushed back like hard and was like, hey, like, that's not my fault. We're doing what we're quote unquote supposed to do. But, you know, and he didn't say like, because he was trying to like call out the coaches without calling out his teammates.
Right, because he's going to get in trouble.
Yeah. And you between the line, and that's how I, you know, some people are already saying like, oh, like, don't listen to Jair. He's just trying to cover up that he had a bad game and blah, blah, blah. But like you said, it's like, he knows he should just follow a guy, but
yep.
He knows that in film review, it's like, oh yeah, you broke up this play or you made them look away from this guy who might be open, but oh, you left this other guy open instead. And it's like, well, we got guys who don't know how to hand off coverage or just playing man coverage and whatever. And it's like, and even when we quote unquote play your screen correctly, Joe, it doesn't freaking work. So do you want us to win the game or do you want us to play your stupid ass system so you can go up there and say, oh, we should have just executed better? And
yeah,
that's the part where I think you and I are on the same page where it's kind of like, Matt, Are you really going to let this shit go for? And, you know, this is the whole thing with the Barry hire and the retention and all that kind of stuff is it's like, I don't care who he was to you. I don't think he coached, or he coached with Barry in Washington, I guess. But that was a decade ago, basically. I don't care that Kyle Shanahan recommended to you heavily. I don't care how he's regarded around the league. He sucks. Like,
yeah.
It's just been proven he sucks, and
yeah, but even like Brian Mafi and that are pointing out he's a nepo baby. Just like I have a hard time with the University of Iowa and nepo babies. You know, he's what is it, Dan Quinn's son-in-law, so
yeah,
whatever. But I honestly think had they lost today, there'd been no way to justify it not getting rid of. Now, yeah, like I've been pointing out to people, it's not that easy just to get rid of him, because then you have to decide who's going to take the interim,
right,
you know, position. Are you going to trust Jerry Montgomery to do it? Are you going to trust Olivadotti to do it? Are you going to trust Greg Williams Rebrovich to do it?
And I know that that's a concern of, you know, for some and all. And my whole thing is, I don't care. I really don't care, because my overarching point is that the comments that LaFleur made after the game, some of the guys like Jair are making after this game, LaFleur, if you don't support your players, you're doing harm to your image within that locker room, because you're always going to be the guy on some level that we know this guy's an idiot that's coaching us, but our head coach is either blinded or also an idiot and can't see it kind of thing at all.
Well, I have to give LaFleur a little bit of credit, because I guess they had a open floor meeting on Monday where it allowed the players to air their grievances to the coaches and, you know, talk things through. That's great, but obviously it didn't work too well with Joe Barry, because we're still talking about how he called a shit-ass game. But yeah, I mean, we'll get into, most likely in the off season, we'll get into replacements. And like I said, I got an article coming out here pretty soon that talks, you know, the five guys that I could see being replacements for Joe Barry. But I know we didn't want to talk about this today, but that's just,
it's honestly the big overarching thing from this game, because I mean, you know, like I said, you just could talk about so many things. The love playing another good game, the Packers making good on, you know, this was a very similar situation to how week two played out, where they go up double digit points. You know, they go up two scores to open the fourth quarter, and then they give it away. You know, the offense goes cold. The defense gets stuck on the field for too long. Your young offense goes cold, whether it's being over conservative or missing, you know, opportunities because you've been off the field for 20 plus minutes of real time for as long as the Panthers are on the field. But, you know, this time the Packers were able to bounce back and win the game. But unfortunately, that is all getting overshadowed because we are again stuck on the Joe Barry of it all. But, you know, we won't, you know, and people are saying like, how much of it is on the players? I don't know. That's the thing but the problem there is, I don't think all these guys are duds walking around on that field.
Well, and that's the thing. Today, they had two starters missing from our defense, Devondre and Darnell Savage. Otherwise, Jair was playing, Savage was playing. Well, I guess three starters, because you're missing Rasul too, but, you know, that's a done thing. There's no thing there. But, you know, yeah, you had Jair playing, you had Stokes playing, Quay was playing, Kenny, Devontae, Carl Brooks, Rashawn Gary. You had all those guys playing, and they still gave up 30 points to a 2-12 team. So you literally can't blame it all on players.
Yeah. And the way I look at it is you see guys on this defense who either have and still are really good players in Kenny, like Kenny. I do think Ja is still one of those when he is healthy. and is used in a way that maximizes the kind of player he is. I think Rashawn is that guy when, you know, he's, you know, and the player around him is better. And I think they have good core guys in like Preston. TJ Slayton has taken a step forward this season. I think Quay is getting there. You know, he's had an up and down season, but a lot of that I think is attributed to the injuries with.
We almost had last year Quay happen today.
I read about that, but I reserved judgment until I saw it.
He hit a guy. I mean, it was splitting hairs. They could have called it. They could have not called it. They obviously didn't call it, but I mean, it was close. But I have to give them credit. They, you know, the players have fight. I laughed my ass off because I saw when they had that fight towards the end of the game, even Anthony Johnson Jr. was like, he looked at, I can't remember who it was, but he looked at him and called him bitch like three different times, and you could read his lips saying bitch. And he looked good today for the most part. I mean, yeah, he was out of it for a little bit, but again, that I got to put that on play call more than anything. Another thing I want to touch on, and then we got to end this because I can't continue to sit here and talk about Joe Barry's shit ass defense. I saw some, and I stayed off Twitter for the most part when the game was going on because I just knew what kind of mess it was going to be. But I kept seeing people talk about how Jair was getting burnt. Jair was getting burnt. Jair really wasn't getting burnt. He was playing zone and he let his guy go because that's the zone defense.
Yeah. We'll do some we'll try to do some video breakdowns in the off season, and especially depending on who becomes the new defensive coordinator. Because like you said, there's, and you know it because your college team is one of the best cover two teams across all levels of football. So you understand what you're looking at when it's time to hand off a route and stuff. And I know that's the joke with the Packers, is that's the hallmark Packers secondary. The silhouette of a Packers secondary player is they're running with their hands up like that, going, what are you doing? But there's a lot of disconnect between where the corners and the safeties are supposed to hand off routes, and you see it all the time. And it'd be one thing if it was one guy doing it every time, if it was one, but we went from Jerry Gray to Greg Williams. We've shuffled through so many corners and safeties in the secondary this season. There's one constant, and his initials are JB. And like you said, we're going to put a pin in it because we'll dance on these ashes at some point. But the literal only thing I want to see accomplished by this defense in the next two games is I want Rashawn to get one more sack so he can get the stupid double-digit sack monkey off his back. So that's literally the only thing I care about on defense the rest of this season.
Well, Preston looked good today. I have to, even though the stats won't reflect it, Van Ness looked good today getting pressure and playing the run.
Inaugure had that really nice play on fourth down, and I thought he had a couple other good plays. So that's the only casualty I can see of this defensive staff is and that's why if they do move on from Barry, I would let Rebrovich call the defense, because I would just say, Rebrovich, you can do whatever the fuck you want with your outside linebackers. Let's see what you can cook up, because his position group is the group that I think has over the last couple of seasons seen the best improvement on a game to game basis. So,
well, and you know what the sad thing is, as much as it seems like they're not, the secondary has been one of the best groups of the season, of this defense for the season.
You're right. And I do think Williams's influence has made a big difference. You look what he's playing with. He's playing with spam this season. He's playing with a lot of spare parts of what, you know.
And he's made him look good.
Yeah. And not just but within Barry's stupid ass scheme. So between the two of them, like I said, I wouldn't care, you know, and, you know, people are like, who do you give it to? I don't care. You know, it's the same thing as you can't move on from Mike McCarthy because who are you going to get that's better? You can't be afraid of that at this point and stuff. Like, at this, and like I said, you just gotta move on because all you're doing is creating bad blood in that locker room at this point. But from the part of this roster that made this game dumb, way dumber than it needed to be, back to a bright spot, the special teams. And I thought the special teams had a solid day. Yes, I know they had some penalties, but like we said, the roughing the kicker, it probably was more at most running into the kicker, but I kind of saw some clips of it while you were going on your rant about Barry. It looked like a soccer ole kind of thing more than anything else.
What I mean. It looked like Lucas was just trying to shine his shoes more than it was anything else.
So I don't have that's not one of those like, oh my God, what a stupid penalty kind of thing. Like,
not like Mike Strife's a few years back that almost got killed on a hit and didn't even get the call.
No, nothing close to that. So, I thought it was a good day overall from the special teams. You know, Keyshawn had that one really good return and probably had another one set up, but the turf monster got him in the first half. And then he had the big return. I think it was on the drive where they got to the their last touchdown. That was a big play to get the big return after.
Yeah, he really looked like he could have broke one today, you know, whether he was missing lanes or some blocking didn't happen. Yeah. Or like you said, he got tripped up on the turf, but he looked like he could have gone at any moment.
Yep. And then the other side of it is, so Anders, he missed an extra point. I haven't had a chance to review it yet, but
it was a high snap.
Oh, okay.
The snap was like clear up here. Wieland had to get it down to.
And let's give credit to Wieland because Wieland, and we've talked about it. Orzek is supposed to be this like veteran, reliable long snapper, and he's put Wieland through the works, and Wieland has done his damnedest to make everything happen this season. So.
He got the hold down pretty good. I just, like anybody else who has common sense knows, once you mess up one part of the rhythm,
the operation,
it throws everything off.
Because for those of you that don't know, you know, everything is supposed to work in harmony there. As the snap is coming back, the kicker is starting to make his approach to the ball, even though it's not there yet and stuff. So once you see that, like as the kicker, you're looking at it and you're seeing your holder have to reach behind his head or something. And you're like, do I slow down? Do I keep going? Because you can't get there too early and the ball ain't ready for you kind of thing. So you've seen some, I think Crosby had one time where he literally stopped and then ran through and kicked the ball, and luckily it wasn't a long field goal or anything. But so Anders missed the PAT. Okay, he then goes on to make, what is it? I think that was after they went up. That was to go up what should have been 14-3. So he still had two more touchdowns and the game-winning two field goals. So he hit the long field goal at the end of the first half, and then had two more PATs to kick, and then the game winner.
Yeah.
And those are the kicks that matter. Yes, I know that the PAT on the second touchdown matters, but for all the things that all Packers fans were worried about for Anders going into this season, him bouncing back, you know, and I know it helps that it quote unquote wasn't his mistake that led to the missed PAT necessarily, but you know,
people are going to be on him because he's the one that missed it. They don't pay attention to the rest of it. And I'm not calling people stupid or anything, but a lot of people don't understand what you were just explaining. There's a whole mechanism there that has to go through for it to be successful. It's not like you can just go out there and kick the ball.
Right.
You've got to have a perfect snap. You have to.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you got to have a perfect snap, perfect hold, perfect kick.
Yeah, as much as everyone does, you know, even Wes and Matt Schneidman did it for fun, you know, for jokes, for shits and giggles. They did the like Schneidman can kick a 38-yard field goal kind of thing. It's like, okay, but and all the people that are like on YouTube, like, look it, sign me up NFL and stuff. It's like there's no rush. You're taking 42 steps to get to the ball, and you know the ball is there for you. It's on a tee kind of thing. It's not.
There's no weather to contend with.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No crowd noise.
But getting back to Anders, you know those misses that happen within a game. Those are the things we were worried about. Where is he going to over, you know, is he going to get a paralysis by analysis? Is he going to oversweat the next one? Nope. He goes out and he makes the next four kicks that his team needs him to make on the day. Or, sorry. Yeah, two touchdowns. And yeah, four kicks. So, yeah, I mean, great game from him today. And like you and I were kind of talking about when we had Robin on last Sunday, I'm really happy with what we've seen from Anders. I think it's worked out way better than any one of us had, you know, could have hoped for, given the scouting profile he had coming into the season, out of the draft and into the preseason. All of the negative stuff we heard during the preseason, I think Bisaccia has done yeoman's work to get him to be a, you know, above average to solid NFL kicker as a rookie. And what you'd like to just see moving forward is Anders be able to kind of do his own stuff on his own so that Bisaccia can get back to working on the rest of his special teams unit. But overall, those are the points that won you the game. Yes, I know the offense had to drive you down the field, but at the end of the day, it's Anders alone by himself who's out there and got to put that thing through the upright, and he did. So another good day from Anders.
Well, and I had it at one time, and I'm trying to get it back up before we end, but just to compare what the seasons were between Mason's rookie season and Anders, and right now Anders is way above what Mason was at the same.
I want to say Mason ended up at like 78 or something percent as a rookie. And, you know, that's the thing is, like, everyone looks at Mason's career with the full hindsight 2020 of his, like, whole Packer career. But within his rookie season, you had the game against Washington where it was that, like, it was in the, like, it was monsoon raining at Lambeau. Favre couldn't, like, he kept trying to throw deep balls and he kept getting intercepted. I think Mason missed like two or three field goals that day and stuff. And you haven't had that kind of game from as bad of a reputation as Anders had coming into as a draft pick and coming into the season after, you know, the training camp that he had. He's been pretty reliable for a rookie kicker. So,
okay. So here's what we got. So far, obviously, you know, there's two games left in the season, so it's kind of skewed that a little bit that way. But field goals made, Anders is at 22, Mason was at 31. Attempted, Anders is at 27, Mason was at 39. Percentage, Anders is at 81.5, Mason was at 79.5. Anders has a 52-yarder for a long, Mason had a 53. Extra points, Anders is at 26, Mason is at 48, and Mason was at a 100%, whereas Anders is at an 89%. But if I remember right, 2007 was before they moved the extra point back.
So, yeah, you just got to throw out the PAT stuff at that point because it's forget apples and oranges. It's apples and lettuce. They're not even the same thing, anywhere close to the same thing. So, yeah, just looking at the pure field goal kicking, Anders has been good. Like, it's been a good season. So, you just hope to see, you know, just like not much different from Jordan. You just hope to see him trend upward in the, you know, as the next season comes along. But I've got nothing but good things to say.
I hate sounding like a broken record. But at least he's not making continuous mistakes.
Yep.
You know, he's not letting that one miss get in his head and then he goes on and miss another three or four.
Yep.
To go back to it, the Carolina's kicker missed two extra points.
And Pinheiro's been around the block a few times. So, yeah, it's one of those that, you know, people are going to bellyache over it for the sake of doing it because they need to be right about their preconceived notions about who Anders is and stuff. So I don't mind it. It's whatever. I just care that he's doing his thing and kicking well for the Packers overall. So love to see what he's done. But like I said, we don't need to beat the dead horse anymore on the defense. It was just good that the Packers were rewarded with a win where two-thirds of, you know, two of the three phases of the game played well today. So that's what you kind of hope for, you know, as a team you hope for. And honestly, like we said, we're going to just kind of be saying the same thing. It's just, what are they going to say in the post game? That's the only difference in terms of what the defense did on a given day, or did they have stupid turnover luck to paper mache over the holes that they have within their scheme and stuff like that. But Joe, who's your MVP for today?
That was kind of hard, 'cause there's not really a, I would have to go maybe Aaron Jones, just go stat wise and how he was looking pretty good, because overall it wasn't like a great game by the offense, but it was a steady, nice game from the offense. And of course, there's not really anybody on the defense that I can give MVP to. Maybe Preston, because he did come up with 1.5 sacks, but that's about it. But I'll have to go with Aaron Jones.
And in that case, I will go with Jordan. You know, not the, like you said, it's a little tough because it's not the greatest game, but put together a solid overall day, clean football game, no turnovers, and drove his team down to for what ended up being a game-winning drive. So you can't ask for much more than that. And like I said, Jordan got to make up for, you know, not being able to answer the bell in the week two game. You know, he had a couple bites at the apple in that one and wasn't able to get it done there. So in a similar, relatively similar situation, you know, a road game against a bad team, he was able to answer the bell this time around. So, you know, it's good growth for this team, this offensive unit to see. So I'm not even going to ask who your LVP is. I think we're both going to have the same one. And we talked for a half hour on that. His initials are JB, and we are going to leave it at that. But Joe, forget the usual outro. I just want to, I wish you were feeling better and that you were fully healthy, but just want to wish you a Merry Christmas, buddy. Had a lot of fun this season with you so far. I know we have two more weeks to go, but just got to reach out and say Merry Christmas to you, my co-host, Joe. Hope that the weather in Iowa is good, not too wild this week, but just want to say Merry Christmas, buddy.
Yeah, and I hope you guys have a happy Christmas over there. I know you're rushing around because of your, what you've been calling your shotgun baptism of your daughter and all that, but, you know, hopefully you guys will be able to calm down and have a good day tomorrow. And, you know, we kind of want to have a happy Christmas for or wish a happy Christmas for everybody out there, and a happy Hanukkah and all that fun stuff out there for the peoples. You know, all two or three of you, or however many's out there, or whatever. But you know, yep. It is what it is.
Yep. So like Joe said, we wish you all a Merry Christmas and a safe and happy holidays. We thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Ohana Packers Edition podcast. Please give us a follow on Twitter. I'm at Kawano Mike. Joe is at Iowa_Joe86. The podcast is at Ohana_Packers. Please visit our website, ohanapackers.org. We have blog post Joey Van Zimmeren has started to write for us again. Joe is posting, if it hasn't gone up by the time this pod is out, it will be coming out this week. I will finally have time again to write for the site. So I will have a couple articles hopefully coming out this week. So please follow our blogs there, our blog posts there. You can find streams of every podcast episode on the website. Please follow the podcast on your favorite podcasting apps. Subscribe and like if you're enjoying what you're hearing. Please give positive feedback or negative feedback in the comments. We appreciate either one of those. The Packers, they're still alive in the playoff hunt. We are still seeing improved growth from the offense and the at Anders Carlson. We wish them all a Merry Christmas. Certain parts of the team need some coal in their stockings, but we hope that the Packers have brought you joy this 2023 holiday season. We wish you a, or we'd like to say a hearty Go Pack Go and aloha to all of you.